This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
I'll start that.
Okay,
yes.
All right. As we sit here staring blank.
Okay, who's going to go? It'll right, be right. Me. Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
After you, my dear Alphonse, it's me, Matt Rausch.
And you're listening to M Squared TechCast.
Are we closing in on a year of doing this?
We are,
here?
Actually. This is our 51st.
Oh, boy. Okay. Oh, let's all mute our phones.
I think he wasn't here when I said that. So
okay. All right.
Foster will take care of this. Let's just start at the top here, and then Foster will just edit this out to this point. Go ahead.
This is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, and we're approaching a year of fun-filled podcasts about high tech from a Michigan perspective.
Yes, indeed. I think this is 51 or 50. I mean, somewhere around there, 50 or 51.
Okay, somewhere around the half century mark.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
so
we're good. All right. Well, we've got a jam-packed show for you here today. We've got Robert McGee from the Engineering Society of Detroit. We've got Rachel Downs from Inforum. She's Vice President of Entrepreneurial Strategies there. She's got a guest. And then we have Tom Nardone talking about the various products and services of something called PriveCo. Okay.
Ooh,
that'll be the fun part of this.
The naughty one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's not just naughty. It's also...
It's some interesting stuff in there, I'll tell you. So then he's got BulletSafe, which that's doing really well. Very mm-hmm. good. I mean, because normally those bulletproof vests go for big money, right?
Not anymore.
Okay.
All right, so let's get back to Robert, who's been patiently hanging on here.
Speaking of bulletproof, let's talk about bulletproof job opportunity here from
nice
the
segue.
Engineering Society of
like
Detroit.
That.
Robert McGee, tell us a little bit about the ESD Fall Job Fair. That's coming up in a couple of weeks, right?
Well, for M&M, thank you guys for allowing me this opportunity to be on your show. I appreciate that more than you will know. Yes,
I like that.
Our
you're
job
Wyman,
fair is coming up on October the 10th from 2 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m., and it's an engineering and technology job fair only. It's the only job fair in Michigan that's tailored for engineers and technology professionals. And you know, Matt, that Michigan is number one per capita in the employment of engineers of any state in the United States. We employ over 63,000 engineers in the state. And ESD is the only society that is multidisciplinary, Michigan-centric, and inclusive of all disciplines of engineering.
All right. So roughly at this point, how many companies do you have signed up for the job fair? Roughly how many jobs will be available?
At this point, we have roughly 40 companies that are signed up. I'll just give you a few that are signed up already. We have Denso, we have DTE Energy, we have GTEC Services, we have Daifuki, we have Jarvis Webb, we have Link Engineering, we have Michigan Department of Transportation, Michigan Department of Technology, Management and Budgets, just to mention a few. And we still have, of course, a number of weeks to go, so we'll probably get another 12 to 15 companies between now and the 10th. Because some of our faithfuls haven't signed up yet, but they're always last minute.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a Suburban Showcase, or is that at this year?
It's at Suburban Showcase, which is in Novi.
All right. And roughly, do you have an idea? I mean, I know at previous job fairs, by the time it's time for the job fair, you have over 3,000 jobs available at this thing. Are you looking at that kind of number again?
Right now we are, Matt, because right now we have over 2,000 jobs just with these companies that have already signed up, and we still have about 2 weeks to go for companies to still sign up. So I figure by the time we get there, we'll have over 3,000 jobs. I pulled information from WIN, which is Workforce Intelligent Network, And in Q1 and Q2 of 2016, the top five job postings in the state of Michigan were all in engineering.
Wow. That's great.
So companies are definitely looking for talent.
Okay. So what kind of skill sets are they looking for specifically? What kind of engineers and technicians?
Well, they're looking for biomedical engineering. They're looking for chemical engineering, civil, construction, design, energy, electrical, environmental, mechanical, and manufacturing. And there are also jobs that they're looking for cybersecurity and IT. And there are a few jobs they're looking for in finance, human resources, sales, and marketing as well.
Well, I know cybersecurity pays really, really well. My son was starting to get into that and discovered he didn't like it. But the starting salary for even somebody coming out of college is well over $100,000 a year.
Wow.
So it's amazing. Yeah. And they just can't get enough of them. There's a big shortage.
Well, you know, Mike, to that point, you know, one of the things that I point out with a lot of my college students is that you can't beat, you know, getting a job in engineering in Michigan, because the cost of living and the cost of housing differentiators, you know, in other places like San Francisco, Chicago, Austin, Texas, Washington, D.C., Seattle, you know, it's huge. So, you know, you start out here making anywhere from $65,000 to $72,000 as an out-of-college grad in engineering, versus you may go to California and make $80,000, but you're going to pay 228% more in the cost of housing to live there than to live here.
Yeah, a friend of mine.
So Michigan is a great place to go ahead and, you know, and anchor your ship for engineering.
A friend of mine from my old Free Press days just took a job as the communications director for a startup in Silicon Valley. And are you ready? She has a 3-bedroom ranch, cost her $1.3 million.
Oh yeah, yeah. no question.
Rachel,
difference between Michigan and some of these other places. It's huge. And the thing that I'm really proud of is these companies are looking for, you know, interns opportunities. They're looking for part-time positions. They're looking for mostly full-time positions. And they're looking for entry-level professionals pretty much at all levels.
Okay. You know, if people want more information on, I'm talking about employers here, you've still got some spots, right? I'm sure Leslie will keep
Absolutely.
Adding tables to this thing.
We have spots left for sponsors. And, you know, Matt, we would love to have just an overwhelming number of participants to come out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this job fair is unique in that it's strictly engineering and technology. And you get to meet face-to-face with the employer that's looking to hire you.
Okay. So if people want more information about this, either from an employer perspective or a potential employee perspective, where do they go?
They can go to our website at ESD.org.
Okay. So the other things going on at ESD, I know you're adding a bunch of student chapters, right? That effort continues?
That effort continues. We have a big, big, big announcement that's coming out October the 3rd, which if I tell you and Mike, I'd have to kill you.
Who would we tell?
So I can't talk about that just yet, but I will after October 3rd.
Okay.
This is going to be our second year with student chapters. We have a lot going on. We did a lot of things with student chapters this summer. We have a lot of kids from our student chapters find intern opportunities, and we're getting ready to start a road tour with meet the leaders of various companies in kind of a fireside chat with our students in our student chapters.
Oh, that's great.
So the first one is going to be at Saginaw Valley with Kirk Steidel.
Let's assume some folks out there have never heard of the Engineering Society of Detroit. Why don't you tell – of course, Matt could handle this too. But either of you, tell us about the Engineering Society of Detroit.
Well, I will start and let Matt just add the icing to it.
Okay.
It's one of the oldest societies in Michigan. We've been around since 1895. It was formed by 13 grad students from the University of Michigan. One of the things that I'm really proud of is that we are, like I said, Michigan-centric. We're only concerned about engineering in Michigan. Our vision, our mission is to keep a strong pipeline of ready talent in Michigan to do engineering work. My major fear and the thing that keeps me up the most at night is that we're not going to be able to do that based on the job demands that I'm seeing come out there every single day. We're working with students at the middle school level, the high school level, and the college level, and we continue to work with them in their professional role as working adults. So we are definitely one of those societies, like I said, that we're the only one that's inclusive of all disciplines of engineering. You know, if you look at the other societies that are out there, the technical societies like SAE, IEEE, SME, you know, they're one discipline only. We are inclusive of all disciplines, which is really what the workplace looked like. I was at one of my corporate members last week visiting with them, and what they're doing is they're moving their mechanical engineers and their electrical engineers into one building because they're doing dual roles. And they're also telling me that they're doing also industrial engineering, they're doing manufacturing engineering. So the days are pretty much gone in the workplace of where you hire me in as an electrical engineer and that's all I do. Cross-disciplinary is kind of what the workplace now looks like. One of the engineers that I met 2 weeks ago at one of my corporate members has an engineering degree in mechatronics, which is a combination of mechanical and electrical, but he's from Germany. That hasn't gotten to the States yet, but it's on its way.
Sounds like what they do at Disneyland or something, right? You know?
Well, so we definitely do a lot to foster working professionals with leadership, you know, as relate to, you know, now you're 3 years out of school, you've been working, you kind of hit those crossroads of what's next. Do I want to go into management? Or do I want to, you know, do a different job assignment? So we help with leadership opportunities. We help a lot with soft skills and the transition between the college environment and the workplace. You know, the culture is so different, and colleges don't teach that. You know, how do you deal with difficult situations in the workplace or, you know, challenges with your first boss? How do you deal with how to present a good presentation in a boardroom when you've never done it with a CEO? Mm-hmm. So we deal with a lot of that. We deal with a lot of resume prep, mock interviews, for college kids that are interviewing for their first job. So our goal is to certainly help that next generation of engineers get ready for the workplace.
Yeah, and I would add the place has a real storied history as sort of being the Detroit Athletic Club for engineers during the heyday of the Big Three in Detroit. But now it is very much firmly planted in the 21st century and very much helping engineering students and young engineers get accustomed to interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary work with each other. And so I want to thank you, Robert, for being here, and I want to give you one more chance to say when and where the job fair is, and for more information, go to.
Job fair is Monday, October the 10th, from 2 to 7 p.m. at Suburban Collection Showplace, which is in Novi, Michigan. It's an engineering and technology job fair only. And employers will be there looking for talent. The great thing about it is they're only seeking engineering and technical talent at this job fair.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Robert.
Professionals, and they're looking for recent college grads.
All right. Thank you very much, Robert McGee, Executive Director of the Engineering Society of Detroit. That website, if you want more information about ESD, either membership or the job fair, it's esd.org. And this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We're going to be right back with Rachel Downs of Inforum and her special guest. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with more of the M Squared TechCast. We hope you're enjoying the show. This segment is going to be a lot of fun. It always is when we have Rachel Downs, Inform Vice President of Entrepreneurial Strategies, talking about entrepreneurial strategies. What a concept.
Congratulations. Thanks for having me back, guys.
Okay.
No, I'm delighted to be here, and we have one of our masterclass entrepreneurs, Jan Getty, here, and she is the founder and CEO of ResourceLink. And I also have my partner in crime, Tember Shea, who is the program manager of our Engage Entrepreneurial Initiative. And with that, you know, I just wanted to bring you up to speed. We just re-ran our numbers. And collectively, we've had 79 women go through our technical assistance programs, and those women have incorporated 38 new companies. They've been granted 25 new patents, created 234 new jobs, and the women that we've supported have raised $19.7 million. So we're really proud of what we've accomplished in the last 3 years. And like
and
I
they
said,
were all from zero. This was all from zero, right?
This was from zero. Okay.
Just business concept only, right? That's how they come in? Right?
Well, no. When we first started, Matt, we were licensing a program called Activate that was developed by Johns Hopkins and the University of Maryland.
I sat in on one of those. Yeah, right.
And so at that point in time, we were, I think, trying to be all things to all people. You know, we wanted to support women who had already launched their companies and were challenged with growth and scale, but we also wanted to kind of create a welcoming environment to build a pipeline. We actually delivered that program over 2 years and recognized that it would be more effective to kind of customize our program offering. So we developed Engage Growth, which is a kind of a boot camp, if you will, for women that takes them through the process of commercializing intellectual property, helps them understand the critical components of building a high-growth company. And then our Engage Masterclass is really designed to support women who have already launched their companies and are grappling with the issues of growth and scale. So we aim to help them reach a revenue milestone of $1 million or more, or successfully position themselves for perhaps their first round of outside investment.
Okay.
But Jan is actually, I would say, one of our seasoned veterans of the current masterclass in Ann Arbor, because she is a healthcare professional that launched her company, ResourceLink, in 2001. So welcome, Jan.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here. And this is quite an illustrious group to be behind this speaker with here. And so I appreciate being involved.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background before you started the company. What were you doing?
Well, I've been in healthcare here in Michigan for a number of years and spent part of my career on the health system side and the health plan side. Mm-hmm. And really, the last experience I had prior to starting my own business was on government and regulatory programs. I really got passionate about working with vulnerable populations and trying to make the community successful, either on the healthcare side or bringing together community partners. And so when we, as often see happens in industries, especially healthcare, we see companies sell, it was an opportunity for me to move forward and launch my program to meet a couple of passions that I had at that time, and that was to really start working even closer in the community and help to develop programs within the community to serve those that have vulnerable populations and needs.
So who pays for these programs? What is the setup? How does this work?
So initially, when we started the company, and what I even do today is a lot of program development on the regulatory side. But over time, with this passion about serving in the community, we put together a network of organizations that really know how to tap into what is needed for people to stay in their home successfully and safely. And often, as probably even around this table, and I've had in my own personal experience, many experiences where we all of a sudden see somebody's life change and we don't know how to get help. And so part of the passion that I've seen here in Michigan in terms of wanting to connect the dots was how to link people that have that need to services easily through technology. Mm-hmm. And because nobody really understood the vision really of the company, we brought in some people on the team that could sit and work with me to take this useless information I have in my head, take and put it together with my incredible network of colleagues and form some technology that we could use to take to the individual market. And that's what we've done. So it would be people in the community that are looking for help, but it would also be in a way that we have done a the platform itself allows people to engage from the health plan world and the health system world, and a phrase that you will hear more and more of, as we saw in Cranes today and other places, the launching of more and more integrated care programs and how to get communication going across the links between individuals and organizations.
So you would be engaged by a healthcare plan then to gather and organize resources for its members.
And allow them a secure portal with which to do that.
Okay.
So we are currently, we decided to take this out as a demonstration out on the west side of the state, and that has gone well. We're expanding it and working in Southeast Michigan with agencies and health plans on the state demonstration going on.
Yeah.
So we are connected. We're seeing it growing. And the goal is to really get it out there and hit hard on the direct market.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and, you know, facing an aging population, you're going to have more and more people who are going to need those kinds of services, right? Because I was personally in that for a couple of years where, you know, it's trying to find who could help mom stay at home, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, so. And I think what's unique about this market is, as many of us know, our children grow and they go to other states. I think we just had some of that discussion. And they want to know what's going on and how to help here in Michigan. And we need to give them a portal and a way to do that.
So, I'm sorry.
I was going to say.
Leap in there, yes.
I'm actually dealing with this issue right now in that my mother has been residing in a long-term care facility for the last 2 years. And it's kind of been a lot of ups and downs. And she's right now at the point where perhaps we need to think about how we might transition her into an environment with less services. You know, I don't think that she'll ever be in a position to live independently, but what other options might there be available to her other than a nursing home?
Right. And so that's part of what the some of the main strategies at the federal and the state level right now are focused on getting people the living choices that they want. But often those people have guardians or family members who have to do that work for them. And who are they? They're the ones that are out on the web. They're the ones that can reach out and help figure out how to take care of mom or even a spouse. And so in that case, you're trying to get them to the setting that makes the most sense, but information at your fingertips to know where you can do that safely. And it's not going to Angie's List, and I don't mean to say that's a great resource, but it's a different resource. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to protect those that are most vulnerable with credentialed, contracted people that we know are safe, especially if we're sitting in another state.
So would you say that's perhaps just a business model analogy, if you will, but it's a resource link is a customized service platform that is specifically tailored to the aging population and the issues that they're managing?
Yes, and it goes beyond that. It's actually a platform that allows that communication between a team of caregivers and providers in a way that is secure. So if somebody needs to get an alert out to somebody, if a son needed to contact their team of care workers to let them know that mom just fell in the bathtub, it's as easy as getting connected. And so that goes out. It's secure. They can trade information. They can data share. You're going to hear a lot about that in healthcare now. How do we trade data securely? It's all instant in real time, and it's in a way that is comfortable to the individual. It is a product focused on the individual. You often get medical records, right? And then you change your hospital, you change your doctor. And what do they first tell you to do? Go log in and get onto their program. This allows you to be the driver, and you connect the programs to it. And it's a different way of looking at it through the lens of the person. It's person-centered.
I'm assuming HIPAA has scrutinized it very carefully because this stuff they don't want in the wild.
I love that you said HIPAA. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I love it. And I know Tom is totally engaged in this conversation here, but it is,
You just, when someone says, I love HIPAA, I was like, really? Yeah, she loves HIPAA? But that's
well, it's not
I
often.
Think you're an expert at it. Is what
well,
it.
Actually, what it, I have a team and I've held teams that on the regulatory side, from the federal level down, if you're not talking HIPAA when you're working in this environment, you're not, you shouldn't be in it.
Yeah.
And security,
and they're very serious,
said,
about protecting those records,
which
too.
Is why cybersecurity analysts are, you know, really hard to find right now.
Right, absolutely.
So we have this whole platform securely locked down in data center, and we work in our own cloud, and we have everything around it to protect it. And because my background was on the regulatory and the executive side in plans, I understood that. So compliance is number one, and we've pretty much built that intact. So it really does allow that secure transfer of information, communication, as well as you can order services and you can have your debit card pay for it while you're doing it. So we're removing all the roadblocks.
Cool. Well, okay. let me ask a controversial or more controversial question. Actually, it's on this list here. The presidential elections are, I don't know, 53 days away. And we've got pretty stark contrast.
Can I just go to sleep now and wake up on day 54, by the way?
We have pretty stark contrast on what the two candidates want to do in this area. I'm not sure how to phrase this. What if the Donald wins? He just wants to dismantle everything.
Well, he's going to have to get that through Congress. That's the thing.
There you
know?
Go.
I mean, I just don't think you can do that overnight. I mean, there are certain, I'll let you answer.
No, and that you're absolutely right, Matt. The Innovation Center was set up through the Affordable Care Act. When that went out, it went out in a big way, and it moved a bunch of money to the communities. And to repeal that would be literally impossible to take back all that money, as well as all the programs that are standing and helping many, many people across this country. So regardless of who gets in, I think we're talking about changing, tweaking, going forward. I just think it would be utterly an impossible task to repeal.
Well, and that would be my prediction, is if Trump does win, they'll go in and do what they should be doing now, which is tweaking and improving it, and then they'll take all the credit for it. So that's how that
Lot
works.
A lot to do out there.
Yeah. So,
all right, that's it for our politics. We'll move on now. So throw that in.
All right. So where can people go for more information on this company? I mean, if you're interested in getting this kind of information for yourself?
Correct. Well, right now we have not allowed direct login. So we are working in a portal where we're setting. So you'd have to get a hold of resourcelinkofmichigan.com. You can look at resourcelinkmi.com. We're out there. You'll come to some of our other websites, MedicareLink.com, if you want to read on other types of information going on federally.
Okay.
And from there, it will take you to the Resource Connection, which is the tool. And to protect everybody that's in it right now, we are taking that out. You have to come through us to start talking.
Okay. And I'm going to ask the Matt Roush question here real quick.
Are
you hiring right now, and if so, for what skill sets? Are you still
looking – that's a great question because our company has evolved out of just the regulatory space into technology. We have a great group of hardware, software. We need help on the coding side as learning and being able to help back us up on doing some coding. We're looking to expand the program even further, and hardware people, security people.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. All the way around.
All right. Well, you know where to find them now,
yes,
folks.
Yes, I wrote that down. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Rachel, great segment. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Well, we have reached the end of this one, though, and we're going to be coming back with a little bit of information on where you can get life's most embarrassing products.
Amen.
But for now, this
is
Matt.
We got the man that can tell you that.
That's right. For now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be back in just a minute. Hey, it's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And we are back with another fun-filled segment of the M Squared TechCast, proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network. And yep. Be sure to listen.
Listen. He had a beer out there.
Yeah, I haven't busted into that stuff yet.
He had a beer
yet,
before you sat down.
The PodcastDetroit.com mothership is the world-famous, wildly popular IT in the D podcast, so be sure to listen
to that. Number one tech podcast in the world on SoundCloud. He said, well, it changes by the week. One week they are, next week somebody beats them out, but typically they're number one.
It's pretty darn close anyway. Yeah. That's 9 p.m. Eastern time on Mondays. So tune in if you care about IT. It's a cool show. But right now we're going to talk about life's most embarrassing moments with Tom Nardone.
He's an expert on that.
PriveCo. So. It bills itself as the world's most private website. So Tom, what is PriveCo, how long has it been around?
Sure. PriveCo has been around a long time. We sell items that are embarrassing to buy in person, and we sell them privately using the internet and shipping them discreetly. We're located in Troy. So when you order from us, your product ships out of Troy in a nice, discreet brown box. And because we're an independent company, we never share your personal information with anyone, and we don't email you after the sale.
So. And even the building's painted brown, so it's very nondescript.
Yeah.
So.
Tucked up behind the Thunderbird Bowling Alley in Troy,
oh,
Michigan.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
So Tom and I go way back.
I started my company in 1998, and at the time the story was that I was a young entrepreneur.
Yeah, I love that kind of
so
talk.
So that's not the story anymore, unfortunately.
Not the story.
Yeah, 18 years later.
Yeah, and you used to do one of the things I always look forward to is he would have the top 10 holiday list from his PriveCo website.
Yeah.
Some interesting items on there, I'm telling you, you know.
Yeah.
So
I think every journalist in America gets 100 great holiday item lists,
and
we would do the 10 worst holiday items.
Yes.
And it was always fun to read. Because these are items you don't want to tell your friends about. They're like a hemorrhoid cream with a numbing agent or a really good nose hair trimmer.
Yeah.
Or we answer embarrassing questions. Like one day around the office, we had to all taste every edible lubricant on the market and decide which one tasted best.
Okay, that's probably more information than I needed there.
The website shopinprivate.com is the first website we ever did.
Oh, that's right. That you did
shop
change
in
the
private.
Name.
Yeah, no, it was always Shop in Private. Yeah, PriveCo is the parent company.
Oh, it is.
Shop in
Private
is the website. And then we're the world's largest supplier of bachelorette party merchandise, bachelorette.com.
Tell us some of the items. Go ahead.
I was just at a bachelorette party this weekend.
That's right. We probably supplied the merchandise. If there was items there, we probably sold them.
We don't have FCC regulations, so you can actually share some of this stuff.
Well, everything's shaped like the male member. That's basically it. You can think of it. It's shaped like you want a shot glass. Do you want a drinking straw? Do you want a cocktail shaker? Cocktail, yeah.
Yeah, got that.
You should give me the bell.
Okay.
And
pinatas, slippers.
Shaped like a male member?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, this year we got flip-flops. Flip-flops.
Flip-flops?
Hey, no.
Yeah,
flip-flops. No comment on that. Okay.
That would be weird to wear. Huh?
Yeah.
Hiking around the swimming pool,
leave footprints in the sand at the beach.
Have you registered the domain mailmember.com?
No. We're just bachelorette.com, which every time that stupid TV show comes on, we get a spike in traffic.
Well, that's a bad thing, right?
Yeah, no, it's not too bad.
Okay,
actually.
All right, good.
Then I own and run vibrators.com. Somebody has to, so, and why not the world's most private company?
He stepped up. What a man. Mm-hmm. You know, so women of the world unite, right?
Yeah,
so.
It's really a very private place to, you know, research those products and get really good ones. So, yeah, we only sell in
the
that,
research.
I guess I wouldn't know the difference between a good one and a bad one.
I don't want to know about the research
that's
part.
The
problem. We'll pass
what is
it?
What is a bad vibrator?
loud or not powerful?
Okay,
so it's got to be quiet and powerful.
Yeah, the problem with that industry
is nice
quiet. Yeah, there's the problem with that industry. There's just so many items you can't possibly sort through. Consumer Reports doesn't do a rating on which one to buy.
This could be a whole new area for you. You could be the Consumer Reports.
That's what we are.
Oh, you are.
Yeah,
okay,
Vibrators.com takes an industry of like 17,000 products and narrows it.
17,000.
And we narrow it down to the best 600 items.
600.
Yep, and we do so We have vibration test equipment and sound pressure test equipment. Like, we have a quiet room. Like, this room has sound insulation. We have the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And we test how loud they are, and we rate all the products. And then even if something passes us, but
I think
gets
our
bad,
engineer wants to get involved in that testing.
But if something gets bad consumer feedback, we pull it. Like, done. You know, no,
so
people don't like it. Yeah.
Ding. Sorry.
Oops.
So, yeah. Ding. So that's what we do. Yeah. We take our business very seriously. Vibrators.com.
Oh, you should. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
there's also a part of your business that deals with gastrointestinal distress as
Yeah, that would be on Shop in Private. You find all sorts of embarrassing things, whether you have warts someplace you don't want warts, or cold sores, or gas, or and then a lot of funny. Shop in Private is a funny website. We take a lighthearted approach to some of these things.
What's the top seller? Not the vibrator. That's a separate website, right?
Yeah, vibrator is a separate website, yeah.
So
the top seller on Shop in Private, it depends on the season, but it can be personal lubricants are always score really
always
well.
Always hot.
Yeah, always. Always score well.
And that's but the...
Well, they should be warmed somewhat.
Yeah, right. You don't want them cold, right? Ooh.
No.
Ooh. So that's the ones... You were tasting? No, that wasn't.
Yeah, so there's all these flavored ones. That's a whole subcategory of the lube market.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, these are fly-by-night, low-budget companies. These are not General Motors of the world. These are, you know, poured in someone's garage, probably. And the flavorings range from, you know, some of the companies will hire, like, a flavor scientist and come out with something that actually tastes like strawberries, and other companies taste like 1970s candy strawberry or really revolting. Some of them are almost revolting. So it's interesting to sort of go by everybody's edible claims and find out which was the best and which was the worst.
Hmm. I love that market
research. This is not regulated by the FDA, I would imagine.
There is actually a FDA regulation on personal lubricants, but it doesn't have anything to do with the flavor. Like, they have to pass a certain – they used to not. When I started the company, they did not have to pass a regulation, but – they have in recent years had to.
Wow.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah, a very good idea. A lot of products dropped off the market, actually. And they say – the company said that they just couldn't afford the testing, which I guess runs about $50,000.
Ooh.
Mm, so. Okay.
So, what else? What else is hot as well?
I'm trying to word things. There's personal bleaching creams have been hot for a while.
Okay.
There was a segment on E! Channel where people were painting the back door white, shall we say?
Oh, got it.
I didn't even know this was a problem. I don't think anybody knew this was a problem.
I didn't.
Ran on TV that there were certain stars that were doing this as part of their, like, you know, ritualistic.
Did they name them?
I don't remember. Oh. But, yeah, they did at the time. And I think it drove a lot of people to run to the bathroom mirror, I think, and then they wanted to.
Well, you'd actually need two mirrors, but
or flexibility.
Yeah.
Part of the testing process.
I feel like I'm on the IT and the D broadcast right now.
We have sunk to that level.
We can do that.
Once in a while.
I'm not sure that's a compliment.
I mean, normally we do these straight business things, so this is kind of fun.
This is the business I'm in. So,
So
people look to my company for very private items, and then we try to do a really good job of, like, so once you've sold 100 of these things, then the next thing is, well, are we providing these people with a good product, especially if there's 6 different choices? So how do we – someone has to decide which one's good. And this is not – the products we sell aren't things you're going to talk to your friends about at a dinner party. They're not things that you're going to read a consumer magazine about. And you probably don't want to be searching all over the internet.
No, because you get tracked on what you're searching for.
We actually even have trouble finding bloggers to blog about the product because sometimes they're so humiliating.
Yeah.
So we try to pick up the gauntlet there and do the work for them.
So you've got like 6 websites, though? What are some of the other ones?
Yeah, so everything has been a spin-off of the shopinprivate.com website, which is anything embarrassing. So we have a website that sells enemas. It's called enemasupply.com. It's people buy enemas for all sorts of reasons. And
I probably don't want to know some of them, but, you know.
Yeah, there's a few, like some people are paralyzed, so they need to evacuate that using one.
Yeah.
But then there's all sorts of woo-woo reasons.
Yeah,
you know, people shooting wheat grass up there and all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But,
hamsters. Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely not – I don't think there are a lot of doctors anymore that would recommend you go take an animal. But there's plenty of websites that do.
Yeah.
So it gets into a bit of a strange spot for us. So.
And even like incontinence products, people are really embarrassed to go to the supermarket and pick up diapers.
Pick up a package of,
whoops, I crap my pants. Then you stand in the line trying to be like, not make any eye contact with anybody, right?
The home delivery market of that is, that, you know, there's a company you might see on late night TV called Liberty Medical, and they sell diabetics. But they sell more incontinence product and erectile dysfunction product than they probably do diabetic supplies.
And you guys sell that too, right?
Yeah, we sell, we have erectile dysfunction products, we sell a lot of products. Most of our customers are actually female, so we sell a lot of female incontinence. There's something called stress incontinence. It's when you pee a little when you sneeze or laugh, and that affects women post-childbirth, like years post-childbirth. So we have a
I'm not even going to make eye contact here now. So.
We don't need to personify. But there's a lot. It's a big problem. So we sell all these Kegel-type products. And the incontinence business, like the Depends, want to make it seem normal to have this problem, and then they'll sell you some absorbent pad. But there's a whole physical therapy side of the business, which is if you do these certain exercises, you won't need those pads, and you'll be free to be yourself. And I don't think the marketing budget behind the latter is as strong as it is behind the Poise and the Always.
Well, yeah, because that's repeat business from a large paper company.
Exactly.
So,
All right, so we're gonna bring him back for the last segment to talk about yet another business. But let's tell them one more time, if they want to get more information, where do they go?
Shopinprivate.com is the most fun one of the three.
Fun. And then you got Vibrator.com. And
Vibrators.
Vibrators, plural.
Vibrators.
And what was the other one?
Bachelorette.com.
Bachelorette.com. You got it all covered there.
Try to be pretty obvious with the names there.
Okay, good. Well, this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush.
And we'll be back on M Squared TechCast.
Somehow we'll be back.
I don't know if it's going to be as fun in the fourth section, but we'll do our best. So we'll be right back. Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush.
And whoop, you're go
listening.
Ahead.
No. Okay. You're listening to the M Squared TechCast, proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network, and we love PodcastDetroit.com.
You'd think after doing this almost a year, we'd have that down, but you got to have a little excitement in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're continuing on with Tom Nardone. We just did a very interesting segment, but now we're going to do a bit more business-like segment. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that's a hell of a business you had before, but
yeah, that's a
it's a little
proud of them both.
Kind of different.
Yeah,
But now we're going to talk about Bullet Save, and he has one on. Let me turn my microphone. You can see it. No, sorry. And it's a low-cost bulletproof vest. Costs $299, I believe.
Yeah, we're the value leader in bulletproof vest, Bullet Safe.
Wow. What kind of a round will it stop at? What distance?
Sure. We meet the same requirements as any other bulletproof vest.
Okay.
Ours is a level 3A, which is the highest level you'll see in soft armor. And okay. It will stop. It's rated to stop a 44 Magnum, which is what Dirty Harry carried around.
At what range?
It's done at 5 yards, so almost, you know.
Almost point blank.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What's the material that you use to
stop the
bullet?
We use the same material that most other bulletproof vests are made out of. It's a polyethylene. So it's a spun and woven high molecular weight polyethylene.
Okay, so it's really thick, heavy plastic.
It's not heavy. It's our vest weighs anywhere between like 5.5 and 6
pick it
pounds.
Up there, Matt. Right. He's across the table. I can't reach him. So right.
Yeah,
that is light.
Yeah. Is that light?
It's really light.
Yeah,
it's
so
really
it's, light. What it is it's very tough, which is a combination of strong and flexible. And it's woven hairy so that the fibers interact with one another. They sort of tangle and help each other out.
Okay.
And it stops bullets really well.
Wow. Yeah. Matt, run out to the car and get your gun. Let's test it.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Boom! Yeah.
I don't have any waivers ready, so let's just not do that, okay?
Okay. All right. That's fine. That's fine. It's all right. I left Grandpa Harry's .32 at home anyway. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so our vest meets the same standard as other vests on the market. But I used to work at Ford Motor Company. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Yeah, I knew that. You mentioned that before.
Yeah, but I worked in the business planning office. I did business planning for Ford. I was an engineer first. I was a member of the ESD, actually, which was on the show earlier.
Yeah.
But and I worked in business planning, and I sort of took the strategies that Henry Ford used to make the Model T.
Mm-hmm.
And I applied those to bulletproof vests.
Made it in black, by the way.
Yep,
which
comes
was
in one
Henry
color.
Ford only
yeah.
made it in black.
Yeah. So. Yep. At first, you could get a Model T in other colors. But once they got it rolling and really, I don't know if you know this, but the Model T started out, and by the time it finished its production run, the price was a third of what it started at.
Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah, the price lowered, dropped and dropped and dropped over the years.
Hmm.
And one of the things he did to get the price lower was he eventually only made it in black. The black paint was harder, so it was a better quality
product.
Probably
like a lacquer or something like that.
Yeah, it was
a
black lacquer. And then also just simplifying the whole process.
Yeah.
Making them and then selling them instead of making them to order.
Well, if the guy could crank out B-24 bombers at the rate of one an hour,
yeah.
he had manufacturing down to a science.
He was good at it, yeah. So we took a lot of those strategies, and that's what we applied to our product. Other companies like a police municipality contracts, those are all custom cut, custom measured. Police departments are a little hard to work with because they're, you know, you can make an appointment with a police chief, but
so
if something's
these aren't
going
off
on,
the rack.
Ours are off the rack,
oh, okay.
But most of the competition is not.
Oh, okay.
So that was one of the things that got the complexity low.
And then sizes are just like normal shirt sizes?
Yeah, we actually use a height and weight chart,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they are fit to your body instead of, you know, like people wear T-shirts and shirts. And especially men wear them in very different manners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the difference between Simon Cowell, who wears his very tight, and Eminem, who wears his down to his knees, they might actually be the same size person, but Simon probably wears a medium and Eminem wears a 2X long.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to fit people because a bulletproof vest fits a certain way. So
mm-hmm.
we use a height and weight chart.
Yeah.
Makes it very easy. Every guy knows their height and they know what they weigh, whether they'll tell you or not.
That's it.
All right, so who are the customers? Who have the customers been for this?
Security guards. That's who we launched for. These are gentlemen that work dangerous jobs, often get shot. Statistically, they get shot almost as often as police officers.
Hmm.
There's more of them in the United States than there are cops.
I believe that,
and they make far less money, and police departments get a federal subsidy for their bulletproof vests, and security guards do not.
Hmm.
So that all sort of pointed to they needed an affordable product.
The military, it seemed like $299 would be a great product for the military.
Yeah, again, they have plenty of money to spend. They're not they're on a totally different level when it comes to budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, average police department spends $850, and the average military vest is probably well into the multiple thousands.
Wow.
Yeah.
But I mean,
they've even invented their own standard for testing, the military did.
They did.
Yeah, and then, not to you know, you can take it any way you want, but the FBI has their own standard as well.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. The FBI standard is just so similar to the National Institute of Justice, which is a police standard, that it's silly to have their own standard at that point. They should really just abolish it, save themselves some money, and use the police standard.
Yeah, well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And then the reason you keep them or get the price so low is, as we talked off.
We buy them in volume.
Yes.
We keep the complexity low, so we only stock the six sizes, six units, six SKUs. And they're cut and stitched in China, but they're tested here in the United States.
Shipping costs from China, that's not a big deal then, huh?
No, not particularly. No, well, they're not very heavy, and they're durable.
And when you think about putting, you know, half of a truckload of them on some boat or something, the incremental cost of that is probably not going to be a lot, right?
Yeah, 5.5 pounds is not a lot.
What it weighs, yeah. 5.5 pounds. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they don't get damaged in shipping. They're bulletproof.
Yes, absolutely.
So what's your target volume for this thing?
I wish
I could say I meant to do that.
Yeah.
There's 1.1 million security guards in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to get maybe 20% of them in a vest.
Mm-hmm.
And the vest has a lifetime of 5 years.
Okay.
The materials are warrantied for 5 years. So that would be 4,000 vests a year.
So yeah.
But we're actually selling more than that, so.
How many are you selling?
We're doing about 600 to 800 a month.
Oh, so, wow, that's great.
Yeah, it's a good business.
Great. So who tests these for you, or have you established your own testing range?
The Oregon Ballistics Lab is an independent laboratory we use. There's four in the country, and they're certified to do the testing for it, so we use them.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, we do a YouTube series where we shoot them. We have it's a very popular YouTube series. It's called How Bulletproof. It's the only exciting thing to look at on our website because the rest of it is just pictures of bulletproof vests. And we shoot our vest with something called a 50 cal Desert Eagle. It's one of the most powerful handguns made. And then we shoot other objects with the same gun. We initially started by shooting, we're like, let's shoot our vest with this giant handgun and watch it stop a bullet. And that video was about as exciting as paint drying.
Sure.
Because nothing happens. So we're like, well, maybe we should do something comparative. So then we shot like four watermelons with the same gun, and they exploded into a million pieces. And we figured we were onto something at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're down to our last minute here. So why don't you tell us one more time where people can get these things?
Sure. You can buy them at over 250 dealers nationwide, or you can get them at bulletsafe.com.
So you sell direct as well as through retail.
Yep.
Okay. Any of the retailers here in Michigan?
Yeah. Harry's Army Surplus on Telegraph Road by Ford Road.
That's near my house.
Yeah. And Dearborn is a great dealer for us. Action Impact, which owns two gun ranges on 8 Mile Road. Fantastic dealers as well. We have dealers in Grand Rapids. Our website has a dealer list, but there's a lot of Michigan dealers.
All right. Well, unfortunately, this fun hour has just whizzed by. As usual. So this is Mike Brennan saying until next week.
And this is Matt Roush saying we'll see you soon at PodcastDetroit.com and on the Internet any old time.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live Internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Roush and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.